and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.
CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Just 3 weeks ago, the Oklahoma Attorney General asked a court to vacate Richard Glossop's conviction and death sentence because he could no longer stand by the case. Yesterday, the same Attorney General urged the Pardon and Parole Board to vote for clemency and stop his upcoming execution. But despite all of this, Glossop is scheduled to die in a few weeks for a crime he's always insisted, and the evidence shows that he didn't commit.
Is Oklahoma preparing to execute an innocent man? We'll look at the case of Richard Glossop. Oklahoma's attorney general says his conviction should be vacated, but Oklahoma's parole board has just denied Glossop clemency. We'll get the latest. Then the Monroe Doctrine revisited. 200 years ago, in 1823, the United States declared all of Latin America within its sphere of influence. We'll look at a growing push for the U.S. to finally revoke the policy, which has been repeatedly used to justify scores of invasions, interventions, and CIA regime changes in the Americas.
The Monroe Doctrine, which is now 200 years old, has been used as a cover for the United States to impose its will on Latin America, and that era is coming to an end. With progressive governments coming to power, vibrant civil society, they're demanding respect and cooperation instead of domination.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Sudan, fighting continues between the army and paramilitary rapid support forces despite a U.S.-brokered 72-hour ceasefire, with airstrikes reported in the capital Khartoum and deadly battles in Darfur. Residents and foreign nationals have become increasingly desperate to leave the most dangerous hotspots and worsening shortages of food, water and medical care. The White House said Wednesday a second U.S. citizen, a Sudanese-American doctor, was killed in the conflict. While the U.S. successfully evacuated its diplomatic personnel soon after fighting broke out April 15th, an estimated 16,000 Americans, many of them dual citizens, still remain in Sudan this week, though it's unclear how many of them want to leave. Concern is growing that violence against Sudanese citizens will escalate after foreign nationals are evacuated. Tens of thousands of people have fled Sudan to neighboring countries, including Chad, which already hosts more than 500,000 refugees. This is a Sudanese mother now at a refugee camp in Chad.
Armed men came to our compound and asked us to leave before we became collateral victims. Under threat, we left in a hurry in a donkey to come here. I got separated from my seven children and I can't find them. We have seen parents massacred by Arab militias while they have done nothing. We are victims of gratuitous barbarism that we do not understand.
Ukraine's government says one person was killed and 23 others wounded after Russia's navy launched four missiles from the Black Sea, striking residences in the city of Mykolaiv. Elsewhere, Ukrainian journalist working for the Italian La Repubblica newspaper was shot dead Wednesday on the outskirts of Kherson in southern Ukraine. The newspaper reports Russian snipers killed Bogdan Bitik, who was working as an interpreter, and wounded Italian reporter Corrado Zunino. The committee to protect journalists reports at least 15 journalists have been killed in Ukraine since Russia invaded. On Wednesday, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, held his first talks with Chinese President Xi Jinping since Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year. China's foreign ministry said after the phone call, it would dispatch former Chinese ambassador to Russia, Li Hui, as a special envoy to Kyiv to find a political settlement to the war.
China always stood on the side of peace on the Ukraine issue. China advocates political settlement of the crisis and promotes talks for peace.
Officials with both NATO and Russia welcomed Wednesday's phone call, but NATO leader Jens Stoltenberg criticized China for not condemning Russia's invasion. In Russia, the jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny said Wednesday he's facing additional charges of terrorism in Russia that could bring him a life sentence. Navalny, visibly gaunt, rejected the charges while speaking via video link from prison during an appearance before a Moscow court. Navalny's microphone was cut after he alluded to his time spent in solitary confinement. President Joe Biden has pledged to deploy nuclear-armed submarines to South Korea and to include officials from Seoul and nuclear planning operations targeting North Korea. Biden made the pledge Wednesday as the White House hosted the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol for a state visit, marking 70 years of the U.S.-South Korean alliance. This is President Yoon.
공동의 비전을 구체화해 나가기 위한
Our two leaders have decided to significantly strengthen extended deterrence of our two countries against North Korea's nuclear and missile threats so that we can achieve peace through the superiority of overwhelming forces and not a false peace based on the goodwill of the other side.
As part of the agreement, President Yoon renewed a pledge not to pursue the development of South Korean nuclear arsenal. Turkish authorities have arrested at least 110 pro-Kurdish activists, journalists and lawyers in a series of raids across 21 Turkish provinces. The arrests come just weeks ahead of a May 14th parliamentary and presidential election, which could see President Recep Tayyip Erdogan extend his 20-year rule. Erdogan canceled scheduled campaign rallies this week for health reasons. Turkey's government accused those arrested of having ties to the Kurdish Workers' Party, known as the PKK, which Turkey claims is a terrorist group. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans have narrowly approved a bill to raise the debt limit in exchange for a 13% cut in discretionary spending. The legislation also caps spending over the next decade, blocks the White House's student debt relief plan, slashes funding to the IRS, and blocks tax credits for renewable energy projects like wind and solar. It also imposes work requirements on able-bodied adults up to 55 years old in order to receive Medicaid or SNAP. That's the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. New York Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said Wednesday Congress should instead reverse Trump-era tax cuts that overwhelmingly benefit the wealthy and are set to increase the federal deficit by $1.9 trillion over a decade.
This isn't just about continued cuts to the poor and to the working class in our essential services, but we can raise revenue. In fact, in tax cuts in 2017 passed by the other side of the aisle, we see wonderful tax cuts for yacht owners and private jets. But in order to balance our budget now, we're talking about cuts to SNAP, to food out of babies' mouths, instead of actually reexamining the inequities within our tax system.
Senate Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer called the House bill dead on arrival in the Senate. Without a deal on the debt ceiling, the U.S. could default on its bills as soon as June. Oklahoma's Pardon and Parole Board has denied clemency to death row prisoner Richard Glossop, even though Oklahoma's own attorney general has sought to vacate Glossop's 1998 murder conviction. On Wednesday, the board voted 2-2 to deny clemency despite widespread doubt over Glossop's guilt. An execution date has been set for May 18th. We'll have more on the story after headlines. Montana's Republican-controlled House of Representatives voted Wednesday to censure the state's first and only openly transgender lawmaker, Zoe Zephyr, banning her from the House floor, forbidding her from speaking. Zephyr will only be able to cast votes remotely for the remainder of the legislative session. The move comes a week after Zephyr delivered a searing condemnation of a bill that would ban gender-affirming health care for youth and after her supporters led a protest inside the state capitol Monday. Zephyr has since been largely silenced on the House floor after the Republican House Speaker demanded she apologize. Zephyr did speak Wednesday ahead of the censure vote.
And when the Speaker asks me to apologize, what he is, on behalf of decorum, what he is really asking me to do is be silent when my community is facing bills that get us killed. He's asking me to be complicit in this legislature's eradication of our community, and I refuse to do so, and I will always refuse to do so.
Tune into Democracy Now! Friday when Representative Zoe Zephyr will join us on the show, along with Tennessee State Representative Justin Jones. Elsewhere, North Dakota signed a new law that bans transgender people from using public bathrooms or locker rooms that align with their gender identity. In Missouri, a judge has temporarily blocked harsh new restrictions on gender-affirming care in response to a legal challenge by the ACLU of Missouri and others. And the U.S. Justice Department has sued Tennessee over its law banning gender-affirming care for minors. In Florida, Disney's suing Republican Governor Ron DeSantis for taking control of its self-governing district around the Disney World theme park, accusing DeSantis of, quote, targeted campaign of government retaliation in response to Disney's opposition to Florida's anti-LGBTQ so-called Don't Say Gay law. Meanwhile, Disney has begun laying off thousands more workers this week, including employees of Disney properties ABC News and ESPN. The company has laid off some 4,000 workers since last month. And here in New York, E. Jean Carroll took the stand Wednesday in her civil lawsuit against Donald Trump for battery and defamation, telling a court, quote, I'm here because Donald Trump raped me. Carroll has accused Trump of raping her in a department store dressing room in the 90s and subsequently accusing her of lying about it. Carroll told jurors, quote, he lied and shattered my reputation, and I'm here to try and get my life back, unquote. The judge in the case warned Trump may have engaged in jury tampering for posting on his Truth Social site that the case was a, quote, made-up scam and a witch hunt. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Welcome, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Oklahoma, where the state's Pardon and Parole Board has denied clemency for death row prisoner Richard Glossop, even though Oklahoma's own attorney general has sought to vacate Glossop's conviction. On Wednesday, Oklahoma's Republican attorney general, Gettner Drummond, took the unusual step of joining Glossop's defense team in arguing for clemency. But the Pardon and Parole Board voted 2-2 to deny clemency despite widespread doubt over Glossop's guilt. An execution date has now been set for May 18th. This is part of what Oklahoma's attorney general told the parole board.
I want to acknowledge how unusual it is for the state to support a clemency application of a death row inmate. I'm not aware of any time in our history that an attorney general has appeared before this board and argued for clemency. I'm also not aware of any time in the history of Oklahoma when justice would require it. Ultimately, that is why we are here, everyone in this room. We are here to see that justice is done. We may have different opinions on what justice looks like in this case, and I fully respect those differences. But in the end, that's what we must have. For me, as the state's chief law enforcement officer, I must be primarily considering what justice is for the state of Oklahoma. And that is what has compelled me to devote hours, countless hours of my time examining the facts in this case. And it is that sense of justice that has compelled me to release materials to the defense team that have been long withheld. I was concerned enough by the research that I had observed that I should retain an independent counsel to conduct a comprehensive review.
That was Oklahoma's Attorney General, Gettner Drummond, urging the Oklahoma Parole Board to grant clemency to Richard Glossop, who has always maintained his innocence. His case dates back to 1997, when Glossop was working as a manager at the Best Budget Inn in Oklahoma City when his boss, Barry Van Trees, was murdered. A maintenance worker, Justin Sneed, admitted he beat Van Trees to death with a baseball bat, but claimed Glossop offered him money for the killing. The case rested almost solely on Sneed's claims. No physical evidence ever tied Glossop to the crime. And Sneed, in exchange for his testimony, did not get the death penalty. We go now to Oklahoma City, where we're joined by the award-winning investigative reporter Liliana Segura. She's a senior reporter for The Intercept. She's closely covered Richard Glossop's case since 2015. Liliana, welcome back to Democracy Now! Explain how unusual what happened yesterday was, and go more deeply into the Glossop case.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Amy. And you know, your introduction did a really good job laying out some of the basics about this case. To be perfectly honest, I am still trying to process what happened yesterday because it was so unusual. Not only unusual, but completely unexpected. 3 weeks ago, those of us following the case, those people involved in this case, truly did not expect that this clemency hearing would go forward. Gentner Drummond, as he said, had taken the very unusual step of filing a motion for the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals, asking the court to vacate Glossop's conviction and send it back to Oklahoma City for a new trial. The Oklahoma City DA had made very clear that this was a case that was probably not going to be retried, and that Richard Glossop was really in a position where he was able to imagine a possible eventual release, life outside of prison walls. And almost as quickly as that happened, you know, things just sort of changed. All of a sudden, the court unexpectedly rejected the attorney general's motion, and then rather than intervene to stop the clemency hearing from going forward, as Governor Stitt has done before, the clemency hearing did take place. And on Wednesday, yesterday morning, I attended a packed hearing where Gentner Drummond, along with Rex Duncan, the former prosecutor who undertook an independent investigation into this case, both spoke about why they believe that this execution should not go forward. Rex Duncan said, "This is, you know, a first for me. I'm not usually here to agree with the defense." And so when the board members came back at the very end with this 2-2 vote, which effectively denies clemency, everyone was shocked. It was a really stunning moment. And I think a lot of us are still waking up this morning trying to grasp what really happened.
Well, Liliana, could you talk about some of the details that have emerged through the years of destroyed evidence by the state, misstatements by key witnesses, what the basis of even the recommendation by the attorney general for clemency? Can you talk about the specifics?
Absolutely. And let me just say, because there's no way to cover it all, this is really a case that's taken a tremendous number of twists and turns. If your viewers and listeners want to go deep into this case, I would urge them to look at the coverage that my colleague Jordan Smith and I have produced going back to 2015. It's all in one place at The Intercept. I would also urge them to watch the 2017 four-part documentary by Joe Berlinger called Killing Richard Glossop that also goes into these questions. And in fact, is part of the reason, a large part of the reason, that documentary series that a number of very prominent right-wing lawmakers here in Oklahoma have taken on this case as a campaign for them. But to answer your question more directly, you know, from the beginning, this case, the evidence in this case was weak. As you highlighted, you know, this story of Richard Glossop being the mastermind behind this murder came solely from Justin Snead. There were two trials. The first trial and the first conviction in 1998 was actually overturned in 2001 on the grounds that Glossop received ineffective assistance of counsel. One of the critical mistakes that Glossop's attorneys made was their failure to show the jury a really astonishing videotape, which showed how two Oklahoma City police detectives had interrogated Justin Snead and in fact, named Glossop something like six times before Justin Snead ever claimed that Glossop had put him up to this. The detectives were telling Snead you know, we know there's more to this. He's setting you up. They named Richard Glossop. And Sneed, eventually, you see in this tape, goes along and helps create this narrative that has defined this case ever since. And so that was all known. That's been known for years and years. Richard Glossop came very close in 2015 to being executed. And at that time, witnesses had come forward to say, wait a minute, Justin Sneed was portrayed as this hapless, clueless kind of follower who did anything that Richard Glossop would say. That couldn't have been further from the truth. You know, people that knew him and had met him in jail said that Sneed admitted, boasted even, that he had gotten away with something that Glossop was facing the death penalty for. So there's a lot that has been known, but in terms of the newest revelations, this has come out largely over the course of the past year. In some years back, these right-wing lawmakers, or a bipartisan group, but largely spearheaded by conservative lawmakers in Oklahoma, were urging for the governor, for the parole board, to take a closer look at Glossop's case. And when those efforts failed, they sought a law firm that would undertake an independent investigation. And this was done by a law firm named Reed Smith. Took on the case pro bono, devoted countless hours, interviewed some 40 witnesses, dozens of people who were never interviewed by the police, looked at all of the records and indeed received stuff that had never been turned over before. And some of the most explosive revelations in the Reed Smith report, which came out last year, was that, for example, Justin Sneed had actually sought to recant his testimony between the first and the second trial. There are letters to his attorney asking, how he can undo this deal that he made. Sort of expressing a sense of regret, almost. And this was also sort of known, years back, Justin Sneed's own daughter had come forward saying that her father was regretting the fact that he had helped send Richard Glossop to death row. So these letters from Sneed, that's one significant piece of evidence. There's also a lot of evidence that it turns out was destroyed between the first and the second trial. This included financial records that were critical because these records would have undercut the state's theory of this crime, which was that Glossop wanted to get rid of Barry Van Treese so that he could take over the motel, which was really these financial records, those that were not destroyed, the ones that we have since seen, really go a long way in debunking that theory. So this evidence that was destroyed, one of the prosecutors at the second trial who assisted the lead prosecutor has since said over and over again that this is horrifying to them, to him, that this should never have happened. This shouldn't happen in death penalty cases.
Liliana, we want to turn to Richard Glossop in his own words, speaking remotely at his clemency hearing on Wednesday.
First, I want the Van Treese family to know how terrible I feel for what they have gone through. What your family has gone through, no family should ever have to endure. I must say again for this hearing that I did not know about Justin Sneed's plan to commit any crime against Barry Van Treese, and I would have never thought of paying anybody to commit a crime. I absolutely did not cause Justin Sneed to commit any crime against Mr. Van Treese, let alone to murder him. I know that in the chaos of Mr. Van Treese's death, I made mistakes in how I responded. I'm deeply sorry that in my fear and confusion, I caused anyone any further harm. Today, I want to thank many people who have taken the time to look at this case closely and to take a stand about it.
So that's Richard Glossop speaking at his clemency hearing. As we begin to wrap up, Liliana, can you tell us what this pardon and parole board is? The 2-2 vote, how does a divided vote lead to his death? And what about the governor's stance, Governor Stitt?
Yes. To be honest, that's a question that all of us are asking ourselves and trying to understand. One of the next steps that Glossop's lawyer, Don Knight, is taking is to challenge that very setup. It's critical to understand that this is a 5-member board. One of the board members, Richard Smotherman, recused himself because his wife, Connie Smotherman, prosecuted Glossip and sent him to death row. So that recusal was absolutely appropriate. What makes absolutely no sense is that the resulting vote still requires, this is four people voting, it still requires a three votes in favor of clemency. And so a 2-2 tie, as it turns out, is weighted in favor of the no's. And so that is being challenged. As far as the board's makeup, you know, this is a 5-member board. Three of the board members are appointed by Stitt. Two of the others are appointed by two different courts, including the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals, that has repeatedly refused to consider the evidence of Glossop's innocence. So all of these boards are political. But again, we were not expecting this outcome at all. This is a severe blow, and it was a really astonishing moment after this 3-hour hearing to hear it result in that way.
Yep. And Liliana, I wanted to ask you, what was the victim's family also spoke at the board meeting? Could you talk about what they said as well?
Absolutely. So, you know, like I mentioned, Richard Glossop had faced execution. Well, this is his 9th execution date, but he had come extremely close in 2015. Prior to that, there was a clemency hearing in 2014 where the widow of Barry Van Treese, Donna Van Treese, spoke about the impact of her husband's murder. You know, they had several young children. She said what victims' family members often said, that this was, a loss that was indescribable, that severely impacted her family and continues to. So she repeated a lot of what she shared, as did other family members. But they also described a deep sense of betrayal at this idea that the state, rather than arguing as it basically always does in favor of this execution, that the top law enforcement officer in the state was actually saying that he didn't want to see this execution proceed. And that was, you know, in some ways understandable. But as your clip that you played early on demonstrates, the job of the attorney general isn't to satisfy the wishes and emotions of the victim's family. It's to do justice, for the people of Oklahoma, and that includes Richard Glossop and his loved ones. And so that was a really difficult thing to listen to, because in that moment, we all empathize with the pain of the victim's family, but I personally was feeling like we were going to hear a vote in favor of clemency. And so, again, it's just it's really disorienting to find ourselves here.
Finally, Liliana, the state of Oklahoma is pushing through something like 24 executions in the next 2 years, this one being one of them.
Well, in fact, yeah, that had been the plan under Gentner Drummond's predecessor. Very tellingly, Gentner Drummond, who came into office in January, one of his first moves was not only to launch this independent probe into Richard Glossop's case, but also to slow down this frenzied execution schedule. And so there are still a lot of people in line to be executed after Richard Glossop over the next couple of years. But he explicitly said, after attending the first execution of the year in January, that this schedule was untenable, that it was taking a toll on the employees of the Department of Correction who are tasked with carrying out these executions, and that he wanted to slow down those executions. So the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals grudgingly allowed this change in schedule. But yes, Oklahoma continues to execute people. I should also say that there are a lot of problems with the cases that will follow Richard Glossop's execution.
We just have 10 seconds. Does Richard Glossop's case go to the Supreme Court?
Yes, absolutely. It will be before the court to review.
Liliana Segura, senior reporter for The Intercept, has covered Richard Glossop's case since 2015. You can go to Intercept's website to see all of the coverage. She was speaking to us from Oklahoma City. Coming up, 200 years ago, the U.S. declared all of Latin America within its sphere of influence. We'll look at a growing push for the U.S. to finally revoke the Monroe Doctrine, which has been repeatedly used to justify scores of invasions, interventions, CIA regime changes, and the Americas. Stay with us.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave.
Oh, yeah.
And go home to my Lord and be free. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried.
Oh, freedom, Harry Belafonte. He died at his home Tuesday in New York at the age of 96. To see our full show on Harry Belafonte